from newstalkzb.co.nz, it's the Mike Hosking Breakfast with BNZ.
Oh, g'day there, and welcome to the rewrap for Monday, all the best bits from the Mike Hosking Breakfast on Newstalk ZB in a sillier package. I am Glenn ZB, and this morning, the similarities between Barnaby Joyce and David Seymour and the way both the media and the public are reacting. The Oxfam scandal gets more scandalous. Julian Genta's bit of news and national leadership competition as well. But before any of that, we are completely illiterate, as it turns out. 20% of us, apparently, can't read or write.
Even if you leave school at 15, you've been in the hands of the state for a decade. 10 long years of clearly doing nothing, going nowhere, and at no point has anyone at any time rung enough alarm bells to stop a million people wandering out the gates unable to read, write, spell, and fill in forms. Here's your next part of the crisis. The very jobs that are predicted to boom in ensuing years are in the very areas where the literacy is so critical. Industries like hospitality, the wholesale and retail trade, the business services industries. How, in real simple terms, has any of this been allowed to happen? Now, yes, parents have a role. Of course they do. Yes, the individual has to take some level of responsibility. But we clearly, despite all the reassurances we get from the governments, the ministries and the unions, that our education system is the envy of the world, have something glaringly in need of desperate attention. It's almost like we want to trip ourselves up. It's almost like we want to make success hard. If the 1 million is accurate, just how long are we putting up with that, eh? How many kids go to school today with no ability to join dots, fill forms, spell, participate in the modern world? And the advice from the bloke who alerted us to this particular crisis, he says, go back to basics. Reading, writing, arithmetic. Not hard, I wouldn't have thought, and yet here we are.
I've always found it ironic when people are concerned about our literacy rates, they bring up reading, writing, and arithmetic, even though, of course, it's arithmetic. It's not arithmetic. So, you know, they're spelling that word wrong to begin with, pronouncing it incorrectly. It's not a good start. Now, David Seymour's copping flack for Dancing with the Stars. There are comparisons apparently to be made with the Barnaby Joyce situation across the Tasman.
Politicians aren't elected as saints. There's the odd exception. I mean, the leader of the Christian Party, or a Christian Party, probably needs to be above board. Head of the Greens can't own shares in nuclear power plants or burn coal. But by and large, politicians are supposed to be representative of the broader community, and the broader community is not made up of huge numbers of saints. We're all fallible. And as Barnaby pointed out on Friday, in what really was a spectacular smackdown of the Turnbull telling off the day before, the day we start resigning over personal issues, there aren't a lot of us left in work. Which brings us to Seymour. He, as it turns out, is my local MP. And I can tell you as a voter, I am not remotely bothered by his desire to dance for attention. I mean, if he'd asked me, I would have told him not to, but not because I fear my local representation will suffer, because let's be honest, most of us never have anything to do with our local MP because we're too busy getting on with life. No, I would have told him not to dance because he's going to make a dick of himself and that doesn't get you votes. And probably Rodney Hyde could have told him that. But how about we tone down these extraordinary expectations of publicly elected officials? We ask of them, by and large, what we don't ask of ourselves. And yet they are merely us, a version of us, our community, our neighbourhood, in an office in Wellington or Canberra. Why, by giving them a vote, do we want them or expect them to be transformed into super beings and untouchables?
Yes. Yes. Is that, I didn't realise that was an option. Can we please have super beings in charge of us? That would be totally awesome. And it would be nice if we had somebody, I don't know, who just behaved like a normal human being in charge of charities, please.
Oxfam's US communications chief takes home $400,000 a year. A corporate parrot. $400,000 a year. More than 20 public relations officials in the UK branch, 20 corporate parrots in the UK branch, only 4 dedicated to safeguarding against abuse. Isn't that incredible? Behind a virtuous veneer, many of these huge charities have become self-serving corporate brands that suck up cash from good people wanting to make the world a better place. Why does a failed politician, I didn't know this guy was into it, David Miliband, you remember David Miliband, of course, Ed Miliband's brother, David Miliband, why does he need to earn virtually $1 million a year to run another leading aid outfit, $1 million? Why does Save the Children International bragging of contracts worth £91 million from the Department of Internal Development in 2016, need more than 55 staff at its London base on six-figure salaries. They are rorting us. It is a rip-off. Two, and this is the best part of this. Listen to these numbers here and you'll be gobsmacked. Two respected academics have calculated that the global poverty gap, the amount needed to push the entire global population over the poverty line, the thing that these aid agencies bang on about constantly, that bill is £47 million. In other words, $100 million. Yet across the world, more than twice that amount is spent annually on so-called development aid. In other words, it is in their best interests to keep mining us, and the message to keep them in business and in fat salaries, and it's disgraceful.
Now, back here in New Zealand, it's not just the National Party, of course, who's got a leadership situation going on. Greens still having to decide on a co-leader, and Mike's been backing Julianne Gentle all along the way, of course. Conflicting stories about whether she's happy about that situation or not.
Is this a big deal or not? And if it's not a big deal and you should be able to do all of this, why do we make it a big deal?
I think it's a big deal because it's never happened before. I mean, any time in the recent past, there haven't been ministers who have had pregnancies and children in office, at least not female ministers. There have been many male ministers who have. So that's why it's novel. And so people are wondering how we're going to do it. But ultimately, it shouldn't be that different to male ministers. We have to take some time off for parental leave, obviously a little bit more around, especially for breastfeeding. But aside from that, both of us have supportive male partners who are willing to be the full-time caregiver, and I'm really confident that we can make it work.
All right, well, good luck with it all. I'm sure we'll talk again. Julianne Genta, who is the latest MP to announce her pregnancy and, of course, still running for the co-leadership of the Green Party. She was on the public radio the other day. The taxpayer-funded public radio, the ones with no ads that don't quite operate in the real world, but nevertheless conduct lengthy interviews, in which she was asked and replied thus.
I see that you're Mike Hosking's choice.
Oh, I know. It's terrible.
Do you reckon, is that the kiss of death for your bid?
Well,
is it?
I'm hoping people won't hold it against me.
What a charlatan. What a turncoat. Eh? She picks the public radio venue. She knifes me in the back. Comes on my program. She loves me. Eh? How can you trust the politicians? Two-faced.
I mean, the really cool thing about that was that A, we got to bag national radio, and B, got to play some audio so you could actually hear in stark contrast how tedious it is listening to its host try and get an actual question out. That was a struggle to make that whole line of comedy work. I mean, I presume that he was meaning it to be I don't know. Let's finish up here on the subject of the national leadership now.
Mike, we just need somebody from the national leadership contenders to announce their transitioning gender, and then the circle will be complete. The Mitchell's in today, apparently. He's, so goes the rumour. He came back yesterday, day early. He was, this is the bloke who's going to run for the National Party leadership, went to a daughter's event in Australia, surf lifesaving, I think, but came back yesterday to prepare, take some soundings, and may well announce that he's in today. If he's in, and Joyce isn't by today or tomorrow, if I was Joyce and I was going to run, I'd let Mitchell do his thing today, take the headlines for the day. And then if I was going to run, I'd do it tomorrow, be last in and get plenty of clear air for the day. Otherwise, it would indicate that Joyce isn't going to run because, I mean, how many days do you need to take, given this thing's been almost going a week now, before you go, you know what, I probably don't have the numbers and therefore I won't run.
Maybe, you know, he's going, just people, you know, ringing them up every day going, you sure you wouldn't flick your vote
my way? There's probably a bit of that.
And then he's just slowly wearing them down. And so after doing that all weekend, you know, you get the call again on Monday and they go, oh, look, okay, all right, Stephen. If you'll stop ringing me, I will.
I do worry, to be honest, the gap between what the caucus who will vote for this, what the caucus wants, and this is the interesting thing. See, the Labour Party send it out, the unions and the membership. National Party do it with the caucus. ACT, I think, actually just do a board. A board sits there and picks them all, doesn't have a vote at all, no democracy involved. But what I worry about is you go along
How
to
does
the,
New New Zealand First do it, do you reckon?
How do you think they do it? How do you think they do it? So they, so the young guys in the National Party, so someone like smart like Judith Collins goes to them and go, you know, you're an up-and-comer, come with me and there's plenty of jobs going. You know what I'm saying? And so the younger, young up-and-comer goes, oh, yeah, I might vote for Judith, which is not necessarily the best thing for the party. It might well be best thing for them, but not for the party, if you see what I'm saying. Anyway, we'll see what today holds.
Yeah, so I can't quite remember how New Zealand First chose their leader. You know, the guy, what's his name, Winston Peters. And then there was the United Future situation as well. Remember Damien Light, the most recent leader of United Future before it winked out of existence, like a sort of the opposite of a supernova. Just a nova, really. Yeah. Funny old business politics. I am Glenn ZB with the funny old business of the rewrap for Monday. We'll see you back here with more funny business tomorrow.